Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a party cast lined up, a lot of games to talk about. We got Tim here. We got Purnell here. We got Chris here. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Purnell's like going half coming in, half coming out.
Just 1 foot out the door in case this goes sideways.
Oh, it will. You need to be ready when it comes.
I don't want this episode to go sideways because I like the games we're talking about.
But that's how you survive. You prepare in advance. You always leave the door. Always leave your 1 foot in the door to get out.
Just cling to the wall while the whole thing spins around.
Isn't that an amusement park ride where just you cling to the wall and the thing spins around?
Yeah. I think it's a Legend of Zelda dungeon.
What?
There's one where things spin around.
Yeah, but do you cling to the wall? You have to.
No, I don't.
Well, there's a different one where you cling to the wall.
That's true.
What? Oh, wow.
Yeah, in Link Between Worlds, because you flatten out and you walk on the walls.
Oh, well, yeah, the whole thing.
That's right.
That is a damn good game, too, so.
Yeah. You go from 2D Link to even more 2D Link.
That one was especially nice, too, because when they first announced it, a lot of people were like, oh, God, it's just a retread. How stupid. And then it turned out to be good. Like, really good.
So. Turns out if you retread one of the greatest games ever made, then you're actually going to strike at least second-rate gold.
It was just a solid game overall. Like, it was familiar setting, which made it easy to get into, and it was just a really solid game.
Yeah, I like it. I can't wait to play through it again.
I'm about to say, like, wait a minute, what are you commenting on, but you've never played these? Like, yes.
I played it. I actually didn't beat it, though, like, because of the Zelda curse, which we don't have time to talk about. No follow-up questions about the Zelda curse.
Oh, no. You can't mention a Zelda curse and not expound upon that.
Okay.
I've never heard of that till now, so I want to know.
Okay, so the Zelda curse is that, you know, I really, really love Zeldas. Zelda 2 is actually my favorite one, which I know, controversial, but not really.
No, it's smart controversial.
I was going to say, yeah, not controversial today, but it was like 10 years ago before people started speedrunning it and stuff. But, I loved the original Zeldas, but at the time the Nintendo 64 came out, you know, I loved that and played, and a couple years after that, finally, Zelda 64 comes out. It's Ocarina of Time. And I played up to right before the Water Temple. Like, I didn't actually go into the Water Temple. So I, like, beat the Forest Temple and the Fire Temple and stuff. And I was like, okay, I think I'm going to come back to this later. And then I never did. And everybody else beat it, and then the next one came out, and I didn't even play Majora's Mask at the time, and then, like, Wind Waker came out, and I played it. I was like, hey, this is fantastic. I'm back in. And then, like, 2 hours later, I was like, okay, I'm going to come back to this, and I never did. Then 2006, the Wii comes out. I'm like, all right, there's a launch title with the Wii, so I bought my Wii, bought my Twilight Princess at the same time, and, you know, started to play it. Like, 20 minutes later, I'm like, all right, I'll come back to this. I never did.
And it sounds like you're just talking about every game I buy.
Right.
I've had that. I will admit, that happened to me with Breath of the Wild. I started it. It was like, oh, this seems like it could be pretty cool. And I started playing it, and I hunted a few temples. And then I put it down and never came back.
I got the hang glider, did one temple, was like, I'm going to come back to this, and I never did. So that's the Zelda curse. Since I didn't beat Ocarina of Time because I didn't care enough, I am cursed now to not care enough about these Zelda games that are actually good games. There's nothing. I have nothing against them.
These Zeldas.
I love that you call them Zeldas.
I like, it's a Southern thing.
The Zeldas.
No, just kidding. But anyways, it even extended to, like, the 2D ones, which are really good. So, you know, Oracles, Minish Cap, you know, I have them all and, you know, never played through them. So I mean, this is old news now, though, because I actually buckled down last year and was like, okay, I'm going to beat every Zelda game on my stream so that I'm, like, peer pressured into finally finishing them. And I'm happy to say I'm now halfway through, not halfway, I'm like a quarter of the way through Minish Cap, having beaten all the games prior to it.
Nice.
Oh, so
go. I got to the last dungeon in that game and stuff.
Yeah. So I'm like almost halfway through the series now, I think, maybe even a little over halfway through, and yeah, they're great games. I actually ended up not liking Ocarina of Time, but you know, it's the game that cursed me, so I think I'm allowed. Yeah. I'm allowed to not like the game that cursed me.
Yeah.
All right, anyway.
I never got into Ocarina or Majora's Mask either. I Zelda is a 2D game to me, and I couldn't get into the 3D games.
Yeah. Wind Waker was pretty good. I like that one a lot. And I haven't gotten to the big, like, the Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, which, by the way, just to make these as palatable as possible, I'm playing remakes wherever I can. So I played through the HD remake of Wind Waker, so I, you know, that made it nice and smooth.
Yeah. Which is the best way to play it. So.
Yeah.
Why suffer through the inferior version?
Because I'm cursed, damn it. I have to suffer through all the inferior games.
My penance.
Yes. That's my penance. I did beat Majora's Mask on the 3DS remake version because I was told, I don't have the N64 version for one, so I didn't want to go and spend the money. But people were like, don't play it on like the GameCube re-release or anything like that because it's bugged. They're like, so I was like, yeah, I'll just play the 3DS remake of this one. And yeah, that ended up making it a pretty smooth experience. But yeah, it wasn't my favorite either.
But anyone else have a video game curse? No other stories besides
curse? I mean, not a curse.
It doesn't have to be a curse.
I mean, well, I have lots of stories, but, you know, this show is...
Do tell.
In the beginning...
Oh boy!
There was Super Mario Brothers. Actually, before that, there was combat, technically, but yeah, no, not, yeah.
All right, should we just get three views? No one has anything. Should we just get three views?
Yeah.
Fernell, do you have anything?
You open that box, and then it's like that becomes the show. You know?
I know. So we'll be like 4 hours of just talking about our first games, and
I was quiet about Zelda games.
You can just talk about popular games that you never beat because of whatever reason, like losing interest or, you know, curse.
I did just stop playing the first Paper Mario. I got to the last dungeon. I was like, all right, I'm good. That's something that I just do with games. Sometimes I'll get up to like the dungeon, last boss, and I'll be like, okay, I'm good. I've seen everything. I'm checking out here. Thank you. I don't want to grind through this.
Good enough.
Because, well, it's like, you know, most video game endings are not great. So it's like, why go through the headache? Like, if I don't just roll the last boss, or, you know, why do the hard last thing if I'm just like, I've seen all the good stuff. Time to move on to something else. Rarely is the last thing
for
the
ending.
Yeah, now it does. But.
Yeah, nice. Shout out to Carnage, who just subbed for his 14th month. So thank you for the sub, Carnage. I don't know why you did that, but you know, you gotta do what you gotta do.
I don't know why you did it. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you, but here we are.
You dumb.
Wait a second.
Bastard.
Hold on. I know it's not Thursday. I know it's not Thursday on this show, but the Smash reveal was this morning. Come on.
I mean, if want to talk about Smash, we could talk about Smash.
That. We got
to
mention that. Yeah, the final character revealed is Sora, as everybody knows by now. There's
everybody cheating except Waluigi. By cheating, of course, I mean getting into Smash.
Waluigi's in Smash. Just not in the capacity that people want him to be.
Wow. The only capacity that matters.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's Sora. I think Kingdom Hearts is a pile of shit, but a lot of people enjoy it, so I'm happy for them. It's tough, you know. I mean, it was gonna.
I think Kingdom Hearts a pile of shit. Let's talk about it for a minute.
Well, it's it's a character and a choice that I think, you know, is appropriate. You know, it's kind of a big deal. Obviously, a very big deal to some people. None of the Disney is coming along with it, but I don't know. The Disney doesn't really come along for every Kingdom Hearts game anyways. True. So
next Smash game, we're going to have Donald and Goofy. You just know it.
They just need costumes for Duck Hunt, and then you're good.
That would be great.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Now I'm picturing it.
Yeah. But I don't know. And then, yeah, that's... Oh, and there's the Doom Guy costume, which is pretty cool. And I wish came with a song. That would have been really cool.
I love that people are pissed off that Doom Guy is only a me costume. Like, it's better than nothing.
It's a blessed miracle that he's even there.
Did you expect him to join the game with, like, a fucking minigun and blow people to smithereens?
I mean, you could have, but, it's...
And Smash...
It's a fine...
no, he's got the BFG.
That's a big fucking gun. Woohoo!
Yeah, it's not. You weren't gonna get. Yeah, no, that wasn't happening. No thanks. I mean, yes, it would have been cool, but just like no, that wasn't going to happen. I didn't think it would. So I think Kingdom Hearts, getting in there is a big enough deal. Like, even if it's not my series, it is a big enough series. You know, it's like when Minecraft got put in there. I'm like, well, I don't care about Minecraft, but I can see how that's a...
That happened.
A big deal and a cool thing. Well, you can remember it because that amiibo comes out next spring.
Oh, my God. That's so far away.
So think about that, because Minecraft Steve came out like last fall. It was like a year ago. And his amiibo comes out in another 6 months. So a year and a half from now is when the Sora amiibo is going to drop. So spring 2024. 23, excuse me, is when we're going to get the Sora amiibo.
Oh my God.
Probably. We still got to get a Seffy. We got to get a Seffy amiibo. We got to get the two people from Xenoblade Chronicles 2. We got to get Kazuya. And then, then we'll get Sora in early 2023. Oh my God.
I got the rest, so I gotta get those too.
I just don't know. Like, it's still... I mean, I don't know. I know nothing of logistics, but just like the lead time on the DLC amiibos, I don't understand why it is so far out.
I don't know.
It's insane. Like the Spring Girl one or whatever, the girl from ARMS, her amiibo comes out at that same time. That's almost like 2 years since she was put in the game.
I completely forgot about that character.
Like, that was the first character of Smash Pack of the second round of DLC.
And I completely forgot. There's so many characters in Smash that I can't remember all of them. What is it, 80 characters?
89, excuse me. God damn, Joe. but... Yeah, it's like, these, if you recall, are supposed to have some kind of gameplay relevancy, but it's like, by the time Min Min, I think her name is Min Min, comes out, it's 2 years after she was entered in the game, and, 7 months after the last DLC comes out, and then, Sora will be even longer. It's just, like, for collector's purposes at this point,
I was hoping to get Karl Marx in Smash. Hillary Clinton for Smash. Yeah.
I just want Sakurai to put himself in the game. And I still want a Sakurai amiibo. That would be great, but yeah.
I'm sad we never got a Reggie amiibo.
That
was a missed opportunity.
Character in, and somehow people are fucking happy about it.
We'll get Reggie before we get Mother 3. Am I right?
Probably.
Am I right? Hillary Clinton was in a fighting game before, though.
Which one?
Oh, God.
Ready to Rumble Boxing on the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Her and Bill were unlockable.
That is ridiculous.
It's so weird. Video games are so weird.
Oh, should we get three views?
Yes, there.
For now, you ready?
We got an appropriate amount of banter at the beginning of the show.
Banter quota has been met, so we will dive into reviews. First game to talk about tonight is Mary Skelter Finale, developed by Idea Factory and Compile Heart, published by Idea Factory International. Released September 30th on the Switch for $49.99. The last installment of the dungeon-crawling RPG trilogy reaches its stunning conclusion. Will the Blood Maidens finally get their happily ever after? Purnell, tell us about Mary Skelter Finale.
So, basically, Mary Skelter Finale is... essentially, the third, like you mentioned, it's the third of a trio of games. Normally, I would say you really should play the other two before buying this game if that is of interest to you. But it is honestly a really nice package they provided for users here, because they give you not the games themselves, but pretty much every cinema scene like every story sequence from Mary Skelter 1 and 2 in the game, plus all the novels are actually in the game and you can read them if you so choose to do so. So the entire story is in this game, but the games themselves aren't. Though personally, I'd still say, I mean, the gameplay is cool enough that I recommend just playing them anyway. But if you're also the type that's like, I don't want to play two games before playing this game, you can come to this one. Now, the game itself, however, so the idea behind this game is that in the previous two games, all of the Blood Maidens and the Blood Youth, as I'll say, I'm not going to explain what they are because you should play the games, but they were all trapped in the what was known as the jail, which was like a living, a living set of buildings deep underground, that pretty much kept them in prison. They were tormented by Martians, and these monsters called Martians, and they were
Martians, not Martians.
I said Martians.
Dad, I'm just clarifying for my own ears. I'm not saying you said something wrong. I'm just like,
I
just want to make sure.
You're so used to how hostile Tim is that you're just like automatically on the defense.
I know.
Yeah, they're called.
Whoa, geez, why are you being a jerk today?
How dare you?
it's the role I was born to play.
Well, not Martians, not like aliens from outer space.
That is correct. Martians, okay. They're kind of like weird. I don't even know how to describe these freaking things because they're just like weird, bizarro monsters.
Okay.
But I'll get to the primary types of monsters in a minute. But so being tormented by these Martians, and their goal was to escape. In both games, without going into why there were two games, they were all trying to escape this facility and get to the surface where, you know, positive vibes were waiting for them. However, in this game, they actually reach the surface as of the conclusion of the previous two games, and they are pretty much fucked from the start. They learn that the surface is not what they expected it to be, and the new game adversaries, known as Massacre Pink, pretty much wreck all of their days and almost kills everybody from the jump. But due to a series of events, everyone gets transported out of the environment into a trio of towers, which are basically new jails. So the way this game works is that you are working with the cast of pretty much every Mary Skelter game collectively, trying to recollect yourselves.
Everybody's here.
There it is, pretty much. This is an everybody's here plus new people game, to explore these dungeons, figure out what's going on, and resolve the mystery of what the hell is up with the surface world, who is Massacre Pink, and how do we keep ourselves from getting massacred by them. So the gameplay in this is traditional, you know, dungeon crawling. You walk around environments. If enemies show up, you get into a skirmish. Battles take place as far as like performing attacks, but the series gimmick in battle lies in the form of like blood, everything related to blood. I'm not going to explain everything about like what blood massacres are and what skeltering is and all, but what I will say,
I'm curious to know about like the monster design, because I'm looking at the store page and there's a monster that has like three sets of teeth and I'm kind of freaked out by it.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second, because that is very relevant to what one of the things that makes this game, this franchise rather, tick. So in a battle, like typical combat, but in this game, when you perform hits to weaknesses, you make the enemies bleed blood. The blood gets on the characters, and the blood essentially powers them up. They can get a little stronger if they get blood on them from Martians. If they get a specific amount of blood, they go into Skelter mode, which is what I was talking about before, where they can use master skills and the like, and they get juiced up. But, of course, they can also get corrupted by this blood, resulting in them going into, I guess that's the Skelter mode. Massacre mode is the good version. Skelter is the bad one. And if they go Skelter, they'll attack the party members, they'll attack the monsters. They just pretty much want to wreck everybody, and Skeltering is really, really bad. So how do you avoid this? Well, that's where blood youths come in. The blood of a blood youth can purify a blood maiden, so they have these weapons called Mary Guns, which shoots the blood of the person onto the other character, which purifies them. It is ridiculous, and I love it. Because the fact that these guys aren't just like dying from loss of blood, regular, just I don't get it, but that's the narrative. But the interesting thing about this is that in the previous games, there was only one character that had this ability for the most part, named Jack. But since you have multiple parties in this game, they had to come up with a way to make it so that the party members didn't skelter without Jack. So for narrative reasons, I won't say who or why, but multiple characters end up with the ability to fire, you know, purifying blood. In addition to that, there are some characters, or some of the parties, don't have these blood use with them, which means that their gameplay style changes a little bit, such as one character who uses matches, which allows the character to calm down, but by using the match, it also puts them to sleep. So you really don't want to use matches in a battle if you can help it, because, yeah, you'll be susceptible to getting an ass whooping. But honestly, it's pretty cool how that works, because as these parties explore the dungeons, they are collectively in the dungeons together. And sometimes you might come across a door that you can't open with one party. And if that's the case, you might be able to do what's called zapping, which is hitting the right trigger, and you can choose any of the other parties immediately and go right to their game and explore as them, and potentially find that this party may have access to the gimmick that will allow the other party to progress. So you're basically using all the parties in tandem, and they're all experiencing their own separate narrative sequences and everything to explore dungeons and get safe. Now, you mentioned Toothy McGee earlier. The thing about that is McGee. The other major gimmick in this franchise is the nightmares. Nightmares are pretty much, I'll just call them like super marching. They are demons who will actually stalk you through the dungeons like a horror movie. Like, they will chase after you, and if they catch you, they will get into a battle with you. However, you cannot kill them. They are invincible, and if you try to kill them, you will die. So your only real choice is to try to incapacitate them so you can run away again. So while you're walking around the dungeon, you might see like a black haze pop up on the map. That is the actual nightmare stalking the dungeon looking for you. If you walk into that glow, the nightmare sees you and it gives chase to you. And you better get the hell out of that aura before it catches you. So it ends up becoming a nice little stalker's chase game. Music changes and everything. And if you put the difficulty high enough, the mini-map disappears too. So you're like fumbling in the dark. How the hell do I get out of here? It's actually, it can get pretty tense if you get caught in the wrong environment. The right environment is pretty easy because it doesn't take much to get away from it. Now, as far as how I feel about the game in general, I think it's fantastic. I like Mary Skelter 1. I like Mary Skelter 2. And I really do like the culmination of the game franchise in this package here. It's pretty cool that they do the refresh Joe, Tim's joke. They put everyone in, everyone's here. And by way of giving you this zapping mechanic, they allow everyone to shine for the most part throughout the game until eventually you start mixing and matching them. But it allows everybody to get used in their own respective narrative arcs. And as opposed to like normally when these games do it where it's like, hey, here's everybody, now choose four of them. I like that very much. I prefer this aspect of things, honestly. The one downside to it I noticed is that at least early on in the game, you end up warping into the different parties, and they're all pretty much experiencing their version of the beginning of the game. So that part can drag on a bit, because you're like, well, I saw what happened here, and everybody disappeared. Now I gotta go to this other person. Here we go again. This is how they felt about getting to the surface. Oh, crap, this is how they feel about the same event you just watched. Okay, time to do the other party. Same thing. So that part can get a little old, but at the same time, there's also still some coolness to it, because you're getting different perspectives of the same event. Yeah. So that can be 52.
Well, as this one stands, $50 for the finale of the series, what do you think of it?
I honestly think it's worth the cash, because even if I were to say something like, well, Mary Skelter 2 was probably a little cheaper than that. I mean, with this one, if you don't care about the gameplay, you essentially get all of the game's narratives in one game, plus their visual novels, or not visual, but their actual novels, and bonus gallery art and music and all of that. It's a pretty good package.
Cool.
And I think it's worth the scratch.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah,
it is good. I'd say buy it.
Looks like Chris
I
is.
Will. Yeah.
There it is.
All right, Chris, your turn to sell us on something. Next game to talk about is G. Darius HD, developed by Taito Corporation, published by InIn Games, released September 28th on Switch and PS4 for $29.99. Take flight in the iconic Silver Hawk and immerse yourself in a thrilling gameplay with both modern HD visuals or authentic retro arcade graphics. Chris, tell us about G. Darius HD.
Okay, well, finally.
Is that how that's pronounced?
It is.
I never pronounce it like that. I always call it Darius.
Me too, but Chris said it's Darius. So.
Darius.
Yeah, it, well,
I will continue to call it. Here's to call it Darius.
Yeah, you can do that. That's fine. It's just the name of a planet, and it's never really, I guess, I don't know if it's ever spoken in the game, but yeah, if you look at the Japanese pronunciation for it, then it is Darius, but it also looks enough like a name that we use in English that is Darius that, you know, that can totally work. I call it Darius, but, you know, this is absolutely not something I want to get pedantic about, you know?
Yeah.
follow your heart.
Oh, on this.
Okay, so yes, Darius, my favorite shmup series, actually. This is funny enough, like this is like kind of like the finale of this series, but you know, then they then a different company like decided to revive it like 12 years later. But of the 80s and 90s, you know, classic arcade shooter games, this is the final one. And it's the one that, oh, what's a shmup? I'm glad you asked. Let's, let me pull out the, Beaker Reloaded right quick and we'll get this sorted. No, but anyways, yeah, so, sorry, clearing my throat like all night tonight. Okay. So.
It's the Rona.
I know, the Rona of seasonal allergies or something. I don't know.
Say Nona to the Rona.
Say Nona to the Rona. Okay. So yeah, people may know the Darius series about from being the STG series about fish. You know, somebody was in a in one of those seafood restaurants where you can like see the aquariums and stuff, and you know, he was just staring at the fish and being like, "What if I shot all of these?" And from that, a game was born. And 12 years after the original three, you know, CRT, like, epic arcade game, we now are pushing into 3D. And this one came out on arcades, PlayStation, and, you know, a few other things later. This is kind of the one a lot of people played to get into the series, because it was kind of, like, the most available for a while, besides maybe the Super Nintendo Darius Twin game.
Yeah.
But either way, this one was quite the epic, because it kind of flows from Darius Gaiden's you know, really beefed up content, and you know, reduces the amount of levels, but they also are split in half now, so it's like kind of one of those things where when you get halfway through a level, you kind of have to choose whether you're going to go up or down, and then from there that kind of like decides, you know, how the level is going to proceed. And of course it has the branching paths of the levels as well to try and get to a certain ending, and of course fight all those big fishy bosses. So what this game introduces as a game is the ability to capture any enemy or mini boss and use it as a secondary weapon to go along with your shots and your bombs and your whatnots. So it's basically, they employ a kind of a Pokey Darius strategy in this game. Like, because you could capture some enemies, mostly, like, famously mini-bosses in Darius Gaiden. But in this one, they just load you up with a set of balls, and you just throw those balls at whatever you want to capture.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to capture just a regular enemy and use its spread shot, you can do that. If you weaken down a mini-boss enough where you can actually capture it, go ahead and do that. There's actually trophies in the PS4 version for each one.
Ooh.
And in and I'm going to break away from the general summary to tell you that in this version they actually give you a Darius Pokédex.
Oh god.
There's actually a list that you can fill out of all the enemies and all the mini bosses of the game, and if you capture them, it adds them to that list. And that's amazing to me. I'm so glad that they did that. Anyways, so once you do that, you get to the big bad bosses, which are, you know, all, of course, amazing in scale. And because this is the 3D game, it's like they're just sweeping across the screen and coming at players. That's so cool. And then you can fight them. And here's another move that they kind of give you in a tutorial to talk about. And it's called a beam duel. So if you capture an enemy, of course you can use it to like to bolster your shot. You can also just blow it up and make it a bomb, right?
Okay.
So yeah, the Silverhawks are not the best. Well, they're expert terrorists, I guess, in that they can blow up hostages like willy-nilly.
Oh, jeez.
Maybe that joke wasn't great. But anyways. here's the thing, though. If you hold down the button at the right time, you can basically charge up this enemy explosion. And if the boss is going to charge a beam at you, which they broadcast, like, you know, they'll really like bunch in. You could see they're like they're gathering a spirit bomb to like, you know, throw at you. While all the people of the world are giving their wishes to the bad guys, you can if you time it right, you can actually unleash a beam attack from your captured enemy. And if it hits the beam that the boss is throwing at you, you can then get into a tug of war. Except opposite, so I guess a pushing war, where you have to, like, you know, jam the button as much as you can to actually beat their beam. So
this absolutely like a Dragon Ball anime laser fight.
It really is. Yeah, it becomes Dragon
and
Ball.
It's fucking so rad.
It is so rad if you can pull it off. It is, like, the coolest thing. And so, yeah, they got that all over this game. And, you know, backgrounds are awesome 3D things, and like, you know, it's just a spectacle of like colors and, you know, difficult gameplay but not too difficult. And in this version, of course, you have sliders for all kinds of difficulty things, and, you know, you can slide your balls up
if well, it's you developed want. By M2 who it's developed are by really M2, good yeah. with remasters and so, stuff like that. So what kind of goodies did they throw in?
That's what I was getting to, is that okay, so you can change your difficulty, you can change your stock of things. Yeah, you can do all kinds of like stuff like that. There's, of course, a ranking system. I don't have the menu pulled in front of me right now, sadly, but there's all kinds of options. There's even like... never mind, I forgot it already. there's options for controls. Like I said, you know, they have the difficulty slider. And, of course, like the main draw of this is that they have completely reskinned the game without really touching the gameplay in a really lovely looking like 3D package, so, or an HD package rather, so like all the polygons are looking real sharp even though they play the same. And then the actual, you know, it even goes as far as like emulating the slowdown of the original game, which of course is necessary in a good shmup, at least a side scroller to me. I like when they do slow down sometimes. And, you know, it's almost like an afterthought, the fact that the entire complete arcade original game is there. But, like, that's also kind of important, because the last time that was ported over was on the PlayStation 2 on Taito Legends 2. And that one was notoriously shoddy, because it was just in this, like, big pile of game, multi-game pack kind of thing. But yeah, this has, like, all of M2's, like, you know, we're gonna just give you everything that we possibly can into it. Of course, save state feature, if you want to use that. And it's just, like, it's all right on, it's tagged to the shoulder buttons, not the bumpers, but the, you know, the trigger buttons. Yeah. So that anytime you're about to die, you can just like, whoop, and then, you know, pause it and save state it or load state or whatever. And, you know, it gives you the nice little countdown, too. So, okay, go ahead. I'm just going to go on all day.
I was going to say, overall, $30 on this one. It sounds like a good package. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely a great package. The only reason I would say not to buy it is if you're going to hold out for the physical edition, which is coming out. And, of course, if you've already pre-ordered or ordered the Cosmic Revelations pack, then this is already coming your way. So, you know, no need. I bought it on Switch, like, last year, and I'm still waiting on that.
Jeez.
Another Chronicle. Yeah, and, you know, at first I was kind of like, well, you know, it would be nice to have G. Darius on this. You know, they'll probably do a good job porting it. And then I realized, or, you know, when I got this, I realized that M2 was in charge, and I was like, oh, this is actually really, really good. So, yeah, this is, if you don't buy any other Darius game, which, you know, whatever, fine. I guess you can live your life. this would be the one I would most say to check out, because it's just got the most going for it. And I think it's the most accessible to you know, newer fans being 3D. And, you know, the Pokemon thing is very addicting. Like, you're going to want to go through the stages and just, like, catch them all. Which works also because they're all fish, right?
Yeah. Catching fish. Nice.
Yeah.
I, in fact, do have the physical edition pre-ordered.
Ooh, nice. Fancy you.
Oh. Switch or PS4?
Switch.
Nice. Oh, same. And which is great because I reviewed this and I reviewed another Chronicle on PS4. So now I have both. But yeah, they need to actually ship them to me now, please.
Well, yeah, it's like a couple weeks or so until the physical of this comes out. So
yeah. And of course, like, the cool thing is that, you know, at what is it? $29.39 Yeah, at $29, it's like $20 less than buying the PlayStation 1 disc. So, I mean, it's actually cheaper than buying the original.
There you go. All right. Well, next game to talk about is BPM Bullets Per Minute, developed by Awe Interactive, published by Playtonic Friends, released October 5th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. BPM is a rhythm action FPS roguelike where you must shoot, jump, and dodge to the beat of an epic rock soundtrack. Delve into a randomly generated dungeon where one missed note can lead to your death. Gain game-changing abilities and loot powerful weaponry to defeat your ancient enemy. Tim, tell us about BPM.
BPM. It's a first-person shooter, rhythmic, roguelike. That's a lot when you say it out loud. It's like, it's all three of those things. So yeah, you drops your ass into a, you know, it's Nordic themed, but dungeons not like throwing frost giants at you like right off the bat or anything. It's like spiders and bats and worms and stuff. So, you know, calm down. But anyways, you so it generates your level. You go in there. You start out with a pistol, and yeah, you must fire your gun in rhythm to the music to shoot enemies. If you try to shoot something off beat, your gun will not fire. It only fires on the beat. So the game wants you to get into a you know, literal rhythm of how often you pull the trigger to shoot enemies. And it's, you know, you have to, it's definitely tricky sometimes to like both line up a shot at the correct beat in the song to actually fire your gun. You know, there's like flying enemies that move kind of quickly, so it's like, yeah, you have to track them and then get your reticle on them at the proper time to pull the trigger. So you'll, each section is made up of like a number of different rooms, which it puts a nice little map in the top of the screen for you. In each room you go into and will generally have monsters to clear out, and you clear out the monsters and you get a treasure chest as a reward, which might have like money or keys or health, or sometimes even like a new weapon, and stuff like that. And sometimes enemies just like drop coins around a room anyways. And then there will be special rooms. And one of the nice things about this game, the game, is the map in the game, is that when you walk into a room, you can see the rooms around it to see what is in them. If it's just like a basic room, or it's a shop, or it is the level boss, which is, you know, important because you usually want to explore the level before you fight the boss to get as many resources as possible together. And yeah, there's like a good variety to the rooms. The game has kind of, it's a simplish looking graphical style, like where it kind of drenches all of the rooms with like a single color. And you know, it'll shift between them depending on your room or depending on your level to differentiate up, but it's just like super saturated color, but it's pretty much two colors at any given time on the screen with, you know, some contrast between them. So you'll go around, you'll shoot enemies, you'll clear rooms, you will pick up coins and keys and whatnot. You need keys to open certain doors, which can take you to different areas and skip a boss, which can take you into there's a library room that is always locked. It can open chests And once you start getting into libraries and opening chests with keys specifically, you start to find abilities. So your character has, you know, they have their gun, they have their firearm, but along with that, you can pick up equipment for your head, like a shield, a arm slot, and like boots. And equipment will give you different abilities. There are, or they'll give you different bonuses. And then there's actual abilities that you pick up, which you can equip that will map to a button. So by default, like your first character has a dash to them. And you can then pick up things that are like, well, usually it's some kind of a special attack that will be triggered with like the one of the trigger buttons or some such. And that is one of the ways in which you pad out your character. You also will find there'll be like little like statues or offering plates around a level that you can drop a coin in, and they will give you like a bonus to your accuracy or your range of your, because different guns have different ranges. Like a pistol cannot hit an enemy on like the far side of a room. You need a longer range rifle for that. Or like shotguns, of course, have closer range to them. So you can drop a coin in the offering thing that will upgrade one of your stats. It'll tell you before you drop the coin in there. There is also kind of some, you know, risk reward, statues around where there will be like, there will be an item, say a, like a bag of coins, or maybe a piece of equipment sitting on a pedestal with like a knife floating above it. And as you walk close, that knife starts to point towards you, indicating that you are going to get some hurty if you take that item. You're going to get some hurty. Well, your character by default only takes, it's 100 health, but it's 4 hits. So one knife will take off one chunk, but some, there's some statues that have 3 knives hanging above them. If it's a particularly big prize and you really want to, I don't know, live on the edge. So that's the kind of decision you can make there, is to take that damage to get yourself an item that might help you out. And generally speaking, like the game feels really good and is a lot of fun. And it's a really fun concept. Like it feels like a classic PC shooter. It feels like Doom. It feels like something you should be playing with a mouse and keyboard, for fucking sure. With just like the speed of at which your character moves and enemies move around, and it's like a ton of circle strafing and enemies chasing behind you, and you needed to get to control what's going on in the room to pare down the enemies there. So it's like, you know, walk into a room and identify like, okay, there's those little bats flying around that shoot fireballs at me. I need to take them out first, because that will surely, if I lose track of them, I will get hit by their ranged attack and I will get hurt. And then you can, that's how I prioritize things anyways. And yeah, you go through the levels, you explore, there's shops around, which the shops are awesome because one, they have awesome music, but they also have awesome shopkeepers. They are Odin's ravens, except they're like 15 feet tall and like headbanging.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just, it's fantastic. It's the game is good, but that's my favorite part of the game is just walking into a shop, hearing the music and seeing one of those birds just bopping around. So there's one that sells like general items, and there's another that sells like weapons, all for coin. So, you know, you go into a level, the layouts are randomly generated, clear out the rooms, kind of build out your character a little bit, and then you head to the boss room, clear the boss, move on to the next, next level. And each, there's different locations. So the first, you know, set of levels is Asgard. There's different realms later on, once you get past Asgard. So like Asgard is made up of like 7 or 8 floors, something like that, to get from one end to the other. And yeah, it's cool stuff. Like you got equipment, you got abilities, you got weapons, you got statistical upgrades for your character. So there's like a lot of stuff you can do and play with and get stronger with your character. But you know, it's not all great. There are some issues I found with the game. So like one, there is no kind of, well, there's no way to like progress your character between runs. You know, it's not like you will unlock more characters that have different starting loadouts, but it's definitely a bit of a grind with that first character who starts out with just like a measly pistol to go in there. And if you die, it's like, well, you got nothing to show for it. There's no like way to just swap out that starting weapon or start you out with some better stats or start you out with just like an ability, a piece of equipment, anything, just carry something over. So I feel like I'm making some degree of progress. There's also like, it feels like they need to do some tweaking of the balance yet. So I spent my time playing this game on easy, and that is a lie. it is not fucking easy. They do, you know, along with the difficulties, they do have some settings for like how closely you want the game to adhere to the rhythm portion of it. And I kept it on loose. So I'm being as loose to the rhythm as possible. And I was still like, you know, I wasn't doing too bad with that. It's more just like sometimes you go into a stage and it's just like, well, I didn't find the bird that I found no new weapons on this floor. So I'm just stuck going up against the boss with my initial pistol. And that is hard. It just takes a long time to whittle him down. Whereas if you do find a better gun or you do get enough money to buy something in the shop and the shop is present, like I have smoked that boss in seconds. And sometimes I'll go through and, you know, get a bunch of cool equipment. And then I'll walk into the boss room and I'll discover, oh, the boss has modifiers on it now for some reason. I don't know if it's random chance or because I, was on a, got a lot of good stuff for my character. And now the boss is on fire. So he does damage whenever he's near me. And he swooped right on top of me. And now my 100 health and my armor are just disappeared in seconds. And I'm dead and back to the beginning. And what the fuck did I just do with the last 10 minutes? And that sucks. And I've had that happen multiple times where it's like, okay, I got, good weapons, some good upgrades out of this first level. And then I walk into the boss room and instead of being normal boss man, he's got like some kind of extra stuff on him. And it's just like, come on, man, I'm still getting my feet under me in this game. Like, goddamn.
Gee.
It's the kind of thing you think that they could save for future runs to spice things up. Like, okay, now you're going to go through and the boss is going to be extra motherfucker, And they also like will throw in these random modifiers on the level itself. Like here's the first stage of Asgard, except there are no shops or there are no items or it's dark. And I'm like, but there's no reward for clearing it on that. And it's not just like a room or two. It's like, why would I start my game? Why would I start my run on a level with no shops or like no rewards and not just hit restart and have it like generate another level? It's just kind of like, it doesn't make sense.
No.
Like I could see it as a thing that pops up later on. I could see it as a thing that's leveraged to spice up future playthroughs after you've like, cleared some areas and unlocked some more characters or, at the very least give you more rewards. Like, hey, if there's no items on this floor and you can clear it and beat the boss, maybe they give you a ton of shit. Like it seems pretty consistent that every map has a challenge room, but I don't know why you would do that because I have not found the chests from clearing a challenge room to be particularly rewarding. Like sometimes it's just like, oh, here's a chest and it has a coin in it. And maybe it's because I did a bad job, but it's like, you go into a challenge room, you pull a lever and it spawns 8 enemies around you. You are surrounded immediately. And it's just like, it's just really tough to do that. And like some of the, not all abilities are created equal, which is fine. Not all guns are created equal, which is fine. But it's tough when it felt like new weapon drops were kind of few and far between. Like if you didn't have the shop, you weren't going to have a chance to get one before you moved on out of the floor. The game also has a weird thing that I'm not so sure about. So how in most games, like you hit reload and it does the reload animation and your gun is reloaded. Mm-hmm. In this, you like might have to tap reload a few times. So like say you're loading shells into a shotgun, say you're loading like 6 shells into a shotgun. You got to tap the button like 7 times, once to open the shotgun and then to load it. on the beat, mind you. And like when you pump, like when you're using a shotgun or like some rifles and such, you have to like, you'll fire on one beat and then you have to like pump it on the next beat to load the next shot. And then you can fire again, which is interesting and complicated. And I'm not sure if I like it. It's just a weird thing, and it ties into the whole like rhythmness of this game.
No.
But you know, from a history of playing first person shooter games or just games in general where you hit reload and it just reloads, or when you shoot a shotgun and the man just does the thing for you, having to do it manually, it, like, really threw me. It's still fun to play. It's something that I hope that they'll, like, you know, there's plenty to play here. There's plenty of areas. There's plenty of characters to unlock. There's a lot of fun to have. I think the game is better suited for a mouse and keyboard setup than playing with a controller. It feels very tuned to that. I think there's a good variety in the rooms and the layouts of the levels, and that you're not going to get bored of seeing the same things over and over again. The music is pretty slamming, which is important given that it is a rhythm-based game.
Yeah. I would hope the soundtrack is good in this one.
Yeah, you can't like turn down the music and put on your own music, buddy. You gotta like have that music on and listen to it and enjoy it. If you're gonna like this game. But I do think, yeah, the music, I've added it to my Spotify and I'm looking to purchase it to have it.
Nice. But
the shot music's great. And the other music is pretty great too.
At $30 on this one on console. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a buy it. I think you'll definitely get your time out of it. I do, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not perfect. It has some things that I hope they work on. Roguelikes tend to get tweaked, as the community plays them and gives feedback to the developers. So I hope they'll do that just to like, you know, all the issues with reloading and cocking the gun are things that one can get used to. It's mainly just kind of like the balance of how it implements those modifiers and like what kind of rewards you get in a level that I think needs to be tweaked just to be a bit more consistent. So you're not just being dicked over for no reason, but it's really cool. It's a really cool game.
Cool. I'm not a fan of the console tax. It's $20 on Steam, $30 on console. I don't
bullshit,
like that, but
it's probably better on Steam. You can play it with mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, but we're redoing the console release.
Not the Steam release. Yeah. So I'd say buy it on Xbox unless you can buy it on PC, because then buy it on there instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it for you, Tim. I guess we'll let you get going.
All right. Goodbye and good night.
Do you have any final thoughts, any words?
About your wrestling event?
Yeah, it was awesome. I went to live wrestling in an arena of thousands of people last week. And it was fantastic. I screamed my voice out.
You sounded great on Friday when we were talking. Yeah,
I mean, on Thursday, I sounded way worse, I assure you. And especially if I tried to, like, if I raise my voice above a certain like projection level, like it didn't come out. It was just, it was the first time I've gone to a large event like that. And I saw a large event there, the large event.
Tall Paul, the large event.
And yeah, I had an awesome time. Saw like some friends I haven't seen in a long, long time. Was happy that they were checking both vaccination status and your ID at the door to make sure that they matched.
Nice.
That's what you get from living in New York, man. They take the shit slightly more seriously than some other states. It was kind of alarming to be shoulder to shoulder, like, you know, ass to crotch to people at a certain point. I mean, those, I was on the floor, so the rows are pretty close. And whenever anyone needed to go, it was needed to leave the row. It was an intimate experience. And it was awesome. And I had a shitload of fun. And I'm sad that I can't just go to it every single week.
You're stuck having to watch it with me and Adam on Wednesday this week.
Yeah, hey, you should have been going to Philly to see it live.
I should.
Is that where it was? Was it in Philly?
No, that's where it is this week. For me, last week it was in Rochester, which is an hour away from me. So,
yeah, you Philly should have gone to Philly, Joe. Why did you go to the Philly one?
Because it's not Wednesday yet.
Well, I mean, but are you, so you're going to that one?
No, I don't
Wednesday?
Have the money for it.
Yeah, there you go. That's a reason for
I'm
it.
I'm poor. I just had to drop $110 for fucking MAGFest. I don't have money to go to AEW.
Say, stop by Mountain Dew.
On eBay.
Seriously.
Reseller Mountain Dew prices.
Oh my God. These prices for reselling Mountain Dew are getting ridiculous. I just want a goddamn bottle of Mountain Dew Uproar, but I don't have a Food Lion anywhere near me.
Oh my God.
Well, sometimes you gotta ask yourself, what would you rather have? Mouth rotting Mountain Dew? Or an experience watching your favorite wrestlers beat the snot out of each other with their blood splashing on your face.
If I knew they were in Philly and that Ashley didn't have work, I would probably still pick the Mountain Dew because I'm paranoid of COVID.
That I understand. But
yet I'm somehow going to MAGFest. I'm probably going to stay in my room the whole fucking time at MAGFest.
I was about to say, you're going to MAGFest.
Walk out, see people, then walk right back in.
Yeah.
Stay away from the people, do.
People get sick at MAGFest. Normal times.
Yeah.
So,
like, seriously, the main reason I'm going to MAGFest anymore is for the indie games.
I'm sure some really good ones have popped up there over the years.
Yeah. Ember. Yeah. We just reviewed Ember. Ember was at MAGFest. That was great.
Didn't we review One Step from Eden at some point?
Yep. That's where I learned about it, too.
Yeah, that was at MAGFest, you know.
Rob came by and was like, hey, Pernell, is this game that looks like it has, like, Eve Battle on Grids? Like, oh my God, sounds like Mega Man Battle Network.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been, yeah, them's fighting herds was there.
Yep, it's good stuff at MAGFest.
Shapes and Beats. Yeah, you know they make the Tuas there. Yeah, all right.
We will let you get going. Do you have any final words?
No, this was the whole thing.
I know this was final words. All right,
stop pushing it.
All right. Next game to talk about: Darksiders 3, developed by Gunfire Games, published by THQ Nordic, released September 30th on the Switch for $39.99. Return to an apocalyptic Earth in Darksiders 3, a hack-and-slash action-adventure where players assume the role of Fury in her quest to hunt down and dispose of the seven deadly sins. The most unpredictable and enigmatic of the four horsemen, Fury must succeed where many have failed to bring balance to the forces that now ravage Earth. Pernell, tell us about your time with Darksiders 3 on the Switch.
So Darksiders 3 is actually pretty fun to me. Like, I was actually surprised by what I enjoyed of it. I never got to play the earlier versions of it. And I know that there was a lot of community hate for this one compared to the other two. Not including Genesis, which was a departure from the series as a whole. It's a good game, by the way. So I came into this one expecting it to be kind of a dud, but I ended up finding it pretty fun as far as combat stuff, because it's not an easy game, though. So I do know maybe one of the issues people had with it was at the beginning of the game, they had an option, which means this shouldn't be an issue they would have with it unless they only added to this game, where they had classic combat style and original combat style. And they described classic combat style as being akin to what you knew from Darksiders 1 and 2. I guess that means mash X, but I could have sworn that the button that you had combos for that game, too, when you did attacks with your weapons, but it's been a while since I played this, so who the hell knows? But what I do know is I played original mode because I'm playing the game it was made for. I should use it, right? And from what I could tell, the combat was fine. Like, you get a new weapon. That weapon has a series of attacks associated with it, usually in the form of, like, hitting buttons to a certain timing or just railing the damn things. but essentially, you end up with attacks, riposts, and dodges that you can do with your weapons. And also, of course, air attacks. And I honestly found that to be pretty fun to mess around with. You can, of course, as you play around the game, you get various map traversal abilities, such as, you know, rope swinging using your whip, or the eventual ability to do things like, you know, like burn down webbing, or glide on wind currents and things of that nature. Done by the way of something called things called hollows, essentially, which you gain as you go out and beat the tar out of sins that are ever so deadly. And I honestly don't mind the character of Fury either. She's actually not half bad. She's a douche, but I mean, I don't think she's meant to be likable per se in that sense. Like, I mean, she is literally one of the four horsemen. I mean, they're not designed to be your friend, though. Again, the last one they introduced in Genesis is actually pretty funny, but they were never particularly nice individuals, and Fiori's kind of the douchiest of them all, so what are you going to do? But the banter with her and her watcher is pretty good, and I like that. Performance is the big wadooble-dooble for this guy, though, because we've discussed this game in the past on the show. But this being the Switch component, that is always up for concern. And while the game is definitely playable, I will say that it is not playable in a perfect manner. So, like, there might be areas where you'll be walking, and then the game might just stop and go, loading screen, well, not loading screen, but loading icon in the corner, and the game will stop. And as the game loading up the next area you're going to, you know, some games will do it where it's like a seamless load, where it's loading it while you're walking down a certain area, but usually those games are also designed with that motif in mind, you know, done specifically for a port. So I was surprised when it happened, but ultimately it didn't bother me so much once I just accepted that this was going to happen. However, there are also environments like later in the game where, like, if you get caught up in some like really gnarly scrapes, the game might do some chugging on the load on the processing of those skirmishes too. But overall, it's fine. The only issue with that could be like if you're attempting to use arcane attacks. What are arcane attacks, you goober? Well, arcane attacks are essentially your counter attacks. If you do a perfect dodge on an enemy, you can then return fire using a combo attack that is referred to as an arcane attack. And that requires pretty good timing that could be muddied up if the game is doing a little bit of a, whoa, I don't know about my poor back. If it's doing one of those. So that's something to be concerned about. But I'm going to also wager that the folks buying this game are either going to be people who only have the Switch or people who just want to play the game on the go, which is pretty much how I exclusively played the game. And I am fine with it as it is. Mechanically, though, as far as, like, I'll go into this real quick before I stop rambling about it, is as far as, like, how, like, progression goes, aside from what I mentioned earlier with the hollows that you find throughout the game that gives you new abilities, there's also a blacksmith that you come across, which will allow you to do, like cheapy sort of upgrades to your weapons. You use items you find on the map to pay him or give him as supplies to boost the attack damage of your weapons by a slight amount. You can also level up your character by going to the merchant and feeding him souls. He eats enough, he gives you an attribute point, which you can attribute to either health, you know, strength, or that aforementioned arcane counterattack damage. And then lastly, beyond that, you can pretty much spend souls to buy random items and, like, basically just items and ingredients for customizations from the merchant himself. So it's honestly, the game works fine to me. I enjoy playing the game. I don't get what people hated about it. I can see why they could like the other ones more, but I don't see what would make the game hated or reviled in any way. Also, I should say graphically, too, the game isn't going to turn any heads or anything like that, but that's not to say that it's ugly, because it's far from ugly. It's presentable nicely. Like, I enjoy what I'm looking at when I run around this game. I like the idea of running around an post-apocalyptic Earth. So I guess technically this is more of like a current. This is actually an apocalypse happening right now. This isn't post anything, but an apocalyptic Earth where there's actually humans still trying to deal with, you know, the outcome of it with, you know, the angels and demons and, you know, the horsemen and all, everybody and their grandma running around smashing shit. Like, I like that. That's my wheelhouse. So for the most part, I'd say this game is fun. I think it's worth your time to play around with. I'd say play the other Darksiders games first, though. But if you liked 1 and 2, there is no reason for you not to play the third game and enjoy that just as much, if not a little less, depending on where you come at this with. But it is a good game.
Cool. So for $40, what's your verdict on this one?
I say I want to go with a try, specifically because of the performance issues that I mentioned before. But, because, you know, some people expect perfection in their game purchases or whatever in that regard. I wanted to make sure to warn people of that. But if that doesn't bother you because, you know, hey, I'm here for the portability power and all that junk, then get in on it.
Cool. All right. Moving on, next game to talk about is As Divine Saga, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released September 30th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows 10, Steam, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $14.99. Yes, amazingly, this is out on everything at the same time. That is awesome. I thought it was just Xbox at first. If I knew it was on everything, I would have gotten you a different system. You got to pay attention more.
Fine.
In a world facing sudden war, a mercenary by the name of Vice finds himself seeking to uncover the evil machinations operating behind the scenes. Joined by a pair of royal princesses and shinobi, does success lie in the cards for this unlikely band of adventurers when danger seems to lurk at every turn? Chris, tell us about As Divine Saga.
All right. Well, so as to not make people feel like we're in a time warp, replaying the same game over and over again, this is not the same as Divine Hearts, you know, with their with its gameplay and stuff, or As Divine Hearts 2. This isn't As Divine, or, you know, As Divine Hearts with its mop-headed protagonist and a magical cat. It's not As Divine Dios with its magical god with the silver hair. It's not As Divine Menace with its magical god with the silver hair. It's not As Divine Kimura with its silver-haired god. And it's not As Divine Cross with its weird masochist lady. No.
There's a lot of As Divine games. Holy hell.
Yeah. Just saying, this isn't any, like, unlike the Alphadia games, these games are generally not, like, connected at any joint. So, like, As Divine is just the word for the world. So it's just like saying Planet Earth Hearts, Planet Earth Hearts 2, Planet Hearts Dios, you know, etc. Well, I guess As Divine Dios, Menace, and Kimura all feature the same protagonist. So never mind, some of them are connected. You know what? It's not my job to comb through all of these Kemco games. Oh yeah, it is. I have to review this one. The thing I like about Xcreate is that when you say it fast enough, it just sounds like excrete. Anyway,
I can just imagine you with, like, all the As Divine games on, like, poster board with, like, yarn going between all of them with different characters and just losing your mind. It's like, okay, Dios Cross. It's not those hearts. Kimura. No, which one is this?
Yeah, I need to, like, yeah, I need to make one, and also, like, you know, have it joined with the Alphadia games and also Alvastia Chronicles for, like, you know, fighting for the top part of your start menu. Because, you know, these games always populate that on Microsoft. Anyways, that's enough joking overall. Let's talk about As Divine Saga. So this is, the As Divine games are already they tend to feature pretty unusual cast of characters, and this one is a little
what pancakes
in the sense that I'm getting so many other games out of it. So we've got our protagonist, always a male protagonist. That's the Xcreate rule. You can set your watch by it. You've got your male protagonist named Vice. Yes, that's Vice, like
Guys of Arcadia. Guys of
Arcadia. Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you know, you've got your deuteragonist slash love interest, always a lady. Well, maybe not this time, actually, but we'll get to that. But her name is Celeste, like Celeste. And I'm like, okay, so we're just giving up on naming these characters now too, huh? But then you're joined by Akane, who might be from the game Akane that I reviewed, but I don't think it's her. She's a little girl ninja. And then Nisha, who I couldn't Google anything that protagonist-y. And so, yeah, it's a dude and two princesses and a little girl. So Final Fantasy V, anybody? Last half of that? Anyways, you know, I would not compare the two. This is, you know, basically dude bro and his totally wanna ship 'em boyfriend is you know, they're two mercenaries in this small town that is the kind of a race, quote unquote, of people who are, like, not superpowered but stronger than general, and, you know, they're very embattled because of, you know, other kingdoms that are after him. And yeah, he gets shipwrecked during a mission, loses his friend. They're not actually officially boyfriend, but I mean, at one point he's like, let's go back to my place, and he gets back to his place and there's only one bed. So I don't know, and they're both, like, very pretty. But anyways, Vise and other dude get separated, and then you meet all these ladies in an order. And it's honestly, it's funny how, like, fast this story happens, because I had my, unlike most of these Xcreate games, I had my entire cast of characters within the first hour. I even think it was about half an hour, and I'm a casual player, so, like, I'm not playing particularly fast, but it's like they really they're just like, you go from zero to full cast like really quickly in this game. And of course, we're trying to bridge the peace between two warring kingdoms, the Kingdom of Light and the Kingdom of Dark, which, of course, this being an As Divine game, those are like two of the three elements that they keep using, light, dark, and void, which is interesting. They've been doing that for like a decade now. And so, you know, the light and dark kingdoms are fighting, but then when you go to beat up the king, literally, that's our dude Vice. Like, Vice has a very muscles approach to everything, so it's like his instinct is to just beat people up. And sure enough, he goes in to beat up the king, and it turns out the king's possessed by an evil spirit. And, you know, just when things get bleak, other guy shows up to save the day, and then, you know, your friend from the first part of the game, and then he gets possessed by the evil spirit and escapes. And so now you gotta, the overarching like mission is to try and, you know, find your friend, and, you know, with the help of the princesses and little girl ninja. So that's the story. That's actually more story than I tend to give in these reviews, but I found it pretty entertaining, and it's pretty good. Like, I actually like the writing in this one. Every other one, they have a pretty compelling story, so I like that. And this one, I think, is pretty good. So the mechanics of the game, of course, we always have to talk about that when it comes to As Divine. No, actually, hang on 1 second before we do. Vice, like, so there's usually at least one thing that sets these, like, these male protagonist heroes apart from everybody else, you know, because they're just anime dudes. They alternate between having a heroic personality and having, like, a really terrible personality. This one skews heroic, but he also, of course, gets in fights with Celeste all the time because, you know, she's prim and proper. This is also a bit of a cliche in these games and media in general. But the thing to note about Vice, if you look at a picture of this game, is that he has shoulder boobs.
Shoulder so, boobs? What?
Yeah, he's got these shoulder pads underneath his like t-shirt armor, and they're bulbous, and at the tips of them are these orange jewels, and it just looks like shoulder boobs to me. Anyway, now we can move on to the mechanics of the game. So I just had to make that note.
These reviews are entirely too long and too involved tonight.
I know, right? Well, we'll skate through the stuff pretty well, because if you played any As Divine, Alphadia, you know, Alta Vista, whatever you want to say, this is like going to be like pretty much that. It's got weapons that you can consume other weapons to upgrade, including status effects. It has the magic system, like I said, of light, dark, void, and like ways to kind of combine them and stuff like that. It has the trust system, where in storylines, if you choose like the right options, which of course, since you can quick save any time during this game, you can totally cheese. Nice. That can affect your relationship with each of these girls and ultimately affect the ending. It has the gambling system. It has both the jewels that you can get from enemies that drop them 10 at a time sometimes, and you can gamble that away to get the best game-breaking items and weapons in the game. You can also just straight-up purchase some from the shop, and you can also win lottery tickets to get stuff, prizes that are a little less good, but still like really gives you the advantage. Difficulty is basically whatever you want it to be. You can set it to really easy, which just has you breezing through, like I said, getting basically your full cast within 30 minutes. Or you can set it to hard mode where you're just going to have a bad time. It has all of that. It, like, the combat is basically set down to, like, you know, attack and skills that you obtain. And just like things like, what's the one I haven't mentioned? The A one. Oh, Antiquia Lost. that other X-Create game that starts with A.
so many.
I know. Like, it has the skill, like, thing where the more you use the skill, the more the skill kind of becomes better. And of course, you obtain new skills every few levels, so like you can kind of pick your favorites and just use them every time, and it actually is good. They consume turn points, which you get, you know, by just using turns rather than magic points. So you can kind of use them endlessly, and you know, and then save up your magic spells for the boss and whatnot. You know, it's very much a game that you've played. I mean, this is, and it's more modern, so it does have all the like nice modern amenities, great QOL. Any of these games played in a void, is a really, really good time. It's just that there's so many of these things that, yeah, at this point, you'll just be like, you know, oh, this is the one with the guy with shoulder boobs. Okay, I know this one.
Well, it's $15. What do you think of it?
Like I said, any of these games in a void is a fantastic RPG. I, you know, although they're sometimes a little light on the story and, you know, the graphics are a bit flat sometimes, although the sprite work's excellent and the music's excellent. But like, you know, when you're just walking around this world, you're kind of like, oh, okay, it's not Final Fantasy V, but it kind of is. Anyway, yeah, it's worth it. And this one is just as good as any of the others. If you're, you know, closing your eyes and throwing a dart and it hits this one, then I think you're going to have a good time with it. If you've collected all of the other games that I've mentioned, like I have, then it's,
and me,
you know, clearly you already like this kind of game, so go ahead. Yeah.
I think I have all of the Kemco games on Xbox so far.
Yeah, I have this one wishlisted on the Switch, actually. I'm probably going to buy it there so I can finish it out before the next one rolls around with, you know, with Cloud and Locke.
You know. Cloud. Oh, geez. Oh, man. All right. Moving on. Next game to talk about is Alder's Blood Definitive Edition, developed by Shockworks Games, published by No Gravity Games, released September 22nd on Xbox One for $19.99. Alder's Blood is a tactical strategy game with stealth-based combat, RPG elements, crafting, resource gathering, and management, exploration, and a rich storyline set in a grim world where mankind killed their god and is facing extinction. Pernell, this sounds like a happy one. Tell us about it.
Oh, it's so positive. I mean, everybody gets cupcakes between missions. It's just great. No, this game is bleak as fuck. So definitely coming in hot off the Darkest Dungeon Road. This bad boy takes place in a world where humanity killed God. Like, killed him. Said, get the fuck out. And apparently that has some pretty monumental consequences. In the form of God's rotting corpse being hidden somewhere out in the waste, emitting, I guess, a miasma that is resulting in some crazy stuff happening in the planet. It basically turned it into like a horrible wasteland to live in. You play the role of an individual who just kind of goes by the name of Chief, who is commanding a group of individuals that I refer to as hunters. In this world, hunters are not quite human. They're not quite beasts, but they come with a slice of cantaloupe at the end. Okay, that was a Simpsons joke that nobody here got.
No. Nope.
But those other two things are still true. And they are kind of isolated from human communities, but they still use their abilities to help them as best they can. And in this particular instance, that involves like monster wrangling and such. The gang gets tricked off in earnest, however, when a major member of their team goes off on his own on a mission in hopes of finding out what's going on with this planet and its situation. And he turns out going blind. And it triggers an adventure where Chief and his unit are trying to learn, you know, what happened to Duke, you know, how to revert it back, and just how to live in this crap hole of a world they're stuck in. So how does this happen? Well, you have a team of up to five people. Chief is the narrative person, but he's not a controllable person or anything like that. He's just the player proxy in the game for like dialogue and stuff. But your player units are faceless. Well, I guess they're not faceless, but they're not like narrative specific. They're just meat bags for battle. You pretty much go along with them between different node environments, the nodes representing locations on the world map. As you traverse this map, you select where you want to go. And for every number of spaces you go, you have to expend a resource of food to get there. So you run out of food, you're in deep duty. Don't do that. Now, when you get to different locations, the various locales have access to things you can resource harvest, like hunting materials or food or money. It's kind of funny that you can harvest money. Wouldn't that be nice in reality, too?
That'd be nice.
It really would, man. Oof. But yeah, you can basically harvest any of these things, and you put your party members to work on a variety of different tasks, including said harvesting or crafting of items where you expend some of the resources that I mentioned before and some crafting, you know, resource to produce items. And you can also just kind of put them to rest. However, if you're not smart about this and set up at least a few of your individuals to keep watch overnight, negative crap can happen, including accidents on hunts or hunting missions. You can have ambushes at your camp where you get stuck in like an event that kind of wrecks over your party. Again, another case of don't fuck up. Be smart about how you allocate your resource, your assigned tasks to your members of your party. You'll be using your crafted materials to build new weapons, new gear, new, like, I guess, like, tools even, and also occasionally shopping at stores for additional food resources or blueprints with which you can use to craft even better things over time. Now, that's just the idea of like what you do in the basic camp environments and stuff when you stop at locations and stop at points. But the main component of this game, of course, is when you get to a location, a story event takes place, and you are sent on the hunt on a mission. Funny enough, in this game, you get guns, you get weapons, but you really don't want to fight ever, unless you have to kill a very specific target or something. Because every once in a while, you might get a mission that says kill all enemies or whatever. But for the most part, if you don't have to fight, don't fucking fight. Because the odds are always against you, and an enemy will always have the means to wreck your face. So you might be thinking, well, if that's the case, how are you supposed to get experience points for your characters when you progress? Well, that's the beauty of this game in that regard. You don't get experience for fights. You don't get experience for killing things. Experience is solely tied to the mission. So if you complete the goal, the mission has established for you, everybody who participated will get loot. So, now that I've described that part, I should go more into the meat of what combat is. I know you're like, fuck, I want this to be short. Too bad, bitch.
None of them are going to be short tonight. This is going to be a 2-hour episode of just reviews. But a quick shout out to Chris for dropping 100 biddies in chat. Not you, Chris. Other Chris.
Hey, your other Chris.
They better not be me. I need those biddies.
Give me my biddies back. So combat in this game is pretty nifty in a sense. So like I said earlier, you're not really meant to fight in this game, but you can if you have to. You get a main weapon and a sub weapon. The main weapon can be like a heavy melee weapon. It can be a firearm. And if you end up using a firearm, you have a few conditions related to it, such as the fact that the gun needs ammo, takes up an extra inventory slot in your hunter's unit. Also, if you decide to fire that weapon, well, guess what you generate? Noise. And that will screw you. You also have a smaller sub-weapon, the weapon that generally does very little damage. It's a melee weapon. And most games, that ends up just being like a thing you hope to never have to use. But in this game, you almost want to. Because if you backstab a guy with your light weapon, you will incapacitate them, which is a good way to either sneak past them or use another ability called Banishment, which will allow you to immediately kill them by using the dark arts. But it also, by doing so, slightly corrupts your character. Get too much corruption through either events or through these events here, using the skill, and they will go crazy and kill people, basically fuck your day up. Don't let that happen. So gotta be mindful of that. So yes, there'll be a lot of ways you end up getting around enemies, actually, like sneaking in bushes and hiding away from them, or backstabbing guys and skulking away. Now, you would think it would be nice and easy if you could just use that, skulk around using your stamina points to hide out in the bushes or whatever. God, I can't even go into that. That's a lot to talk about. But the other thing is that you also give off a putrid stink because your hunters don't fucking bathe. Ever. So that would be extreme. But it's very, and in this game, it's very ineffective because.
Speaking of Magfest.
Whereas if you were just trying to avoid humans in the town, mission accomplished. In this game, you're trying to avoid monsters, and monsters pick up your scent as it rides on the wind. If they smell you, they will rush you and immediately go on the attack if they find you. And the wind that carries your smell changes during the combat stage and is not predictable. So you could be thinking you're doing a great job on the move. Suddenly the wind changes direction. Bam! Now werewolf man smells your butt and he's mauling your ass. It's not great. But that is the name of the game. So be careful.
No, the name of the game is Alder's Blood, Definitive Edition.
Alder's Blood, Stanky Ass Edition. So honestly, that is the much of the meat and potatoes of the game too. It's the resource management, it's the combat management, and the basically just progressing through the narrative and learning what the heck is going on and how to hopefully find God's body and put it into whatever nightmare these people are stuck living in, because their world sucks. The game itself, I will say, there's a weird element to this game. It's going to ultimately get a try, but the reason being is because functionally it works, right? Like, it plays well, the atmosphere is done well. I'm not a particularly fond of the character art, but that is a design choice. It's not bad art. It's just not Purnell art. But what I can say is that it's something about the combat in this, and that I want to be killing dudes sometimes, at least in a tactical game. But this game is heavy Nelly on the getaway, never be seen. And it can be a little messy on you. Like, sometimes it feels like, man, I want to get more action going. And I wanted action. Couldn't have it. Because it's literally ineffective to go action-packed in this. Like, if you do that, you're in the wrong place. If you need that, you're in the wrong place. But in short bursts, even with the quiet, you know, everything's doom and gloom music and all that stuff, I was able to still find enjoyment in this game. It just wasn't a game that made me go, oh, shit, this is my jam. It was more like, yeah, this game's decent. Yeah, it's a decent game. So
you say it gets to try it?
I definitely think it gets to try it. Joe's like, yes, now move on.
I'm waiting to see if you had anything else to say.
Oh, see, I'm always antagonizing. I'm on the defensive. See, Chris nailed it. I'm just that kind of guy this week. But yeah, like, essentially, I think the game is a decent try in a sense that as long as you're willing to come into it knowing that there's nothing upbeat in this world, you're not going to get a positive dopamine hit from this bad boy, and it's not lively. You're going to come into this focused, ready to progress and skulk about. Oh, and one last thing. Leveling up in this game. When you get enough experience points from the missions, leveling up really performs. You don't get like stats and stuff like you normally would expect. Instead, you end up picking traits from a series of randomly generated ones, and they affect your character. And every once in a while, you'll actually get a negative one just dumped on a guy. So sometimes you'll find yourself needing to just outright either sacrifice a unit because they end up becoming too corrupted or traits suck.
Drop or it, buying a new
hunter and starting scratch. But fortunately, since the traits are the things that make the hunters unique and special in their equipment, which you can just kind of pass from hunter to hunter, with the exception being the charms, which once you put it on a guy, it's stuck with him for good.
Purnell said unique. Everyone take a drink.
Unique.
Also, Chris just dropped 1,000 biddies in chat. Chris, thank you so much for that. I can't thank you enough. Not you, Chris. Other Chris. Chris in chat.
Chris really.
Chris is taking Chris's credit.
Yeah. That's what we do.
Chris with a K.
That's how Chris's operate.
Thank you, Chris, so much for coming by and dropping biddies. I love having you here. I love having you drop by. And you remind me to smile, which I don't do enough.
You don't do it enough. You should smile more. It's just, oh crap, now I'm in trouble.
Everybody say unique.
Yeah.
Unique.
But yeah, so like, but this game in the end, like I said, you get traits and shit. It's fun. You should give it a try. It is definitely a try. I'll stop rambling about it. There's a bloody alder in effect here.
All right, next game to talk about is Haustoria, developed by Antares Games, published by Red Deer Games, released September 24th on Switch for $12.99. The universe has fallen under the curse of an ancient cosmic being known as the Haustoria. Confront its darkness while exploring a harsh, hand-drawn world. Chris, tell us about Haustoria.
They shouldn't describe it as harsh. The drawings look pretty good. Come on, I'd hang these on my fridge. No, okay, so, yeah, Haustoria. I'll try and make this, you know, pretty brief.
No, you won't.
Haustoria is a puzzle platformer kind of exploration game. It very much uses, like, the stage's narrative kind of thing. Like, they literally write words against the background to tell the story of a boy who's going off to defeat a great evil in some kind of tower. He inherits from his mortally wounded soldier father a tack, like a thumbtack, like the one that you like hang posters up with that you don't particularly like. And with this thumbtack, you can actually affect the world, including destroying evil towers and big weird bug enemies, which is kind of cool. But, you know, that's going to be based on the context of the room. For the most part, you're going to be walking around and jumping and solving physics puzzles in order to proceed. That's mainly the thrust of this game. So it's basically, you know, you go from room to room, usually, you know, just clicking on a target at the end of the room in order to proceed. So it very much like moves room to room. And there'll be things like, you know, as you walk towards, like, let's say, like a little hill, like the hill may be raising to the fact that once you get to it, you can't climb over it. Well, if it has like that tack symbol, then you can push one of the shoulder buttons, depending on which color the tack is, because there's two of them actually, and it'll pin that hill into place so that then you can walk to it and actually jump across and, you know, do whatever. And they use that mechanic on actually sparingly. Like it's not every single puzzle is like that, which is kind of nice. There's a lot of like switching and like lever puzzles and things like that as well, which I think the game handles pretty smartly. So I like the way these puzzles are designed. But yeah, for the most part, like you'll be using like tacks to like, you know, stop spikes from getting to you, stop enemies from getting to you, and occasionally, like I said, defeating weird ass bug monsters, and occasionally like eyeballs with tentacles, which is creepy as well. But those sometimes serve as puzzles too. There's collectible forest spirits throughout the game that you can pick up, a total of 13, and so like that kind of adds another layer of challenge, and I'm almost sure that you have to collect all of them to get like the good ending or something like that. It seems like a relatively not long game, but I actually haven't beaten it yet, so I can't confirm that. But yeah, the drawings are actually pretty nice. It's very much like a pencil on cardboard paper kind of look. And you have everything from like, you know, if they're denoting wind, then it'll be like this little pencil line that just goes across the sky, and like animated, like, you know, to swirl like some wind and stuff. It's very charming. And you know, you often have several layers in the background to give it like an actual 3D look, which I really quite enjoy. Controls are a bit floaty. You'll sometimes end up stuck on the side of platforms. And at first I was like, well, this must be a game design decision so that, you know, you can get through puzzles better. But no, it's just some of the gameplay like mechanics are a little ramshackle, but honestly, the game itself is forgiving enough that such things can be overlooked. Like I said, I do like that occasionally they'll kind of put you in a room with some gears and like levers and buttons, and like you just got to maneuver, you know, something on the other side of the room that you can't reach by, you know, pulling the right lever at the right time and pushing the right button at the right time. It's got some good little brain teasers like that. So yeah. Overall, a charming game, a little bleak because, you know, it's one boy taking on some great evil, and, you know, the backgrounds are very barren for the most part, like meant to look like, you know, kind of barren and hopeless and stuff like that. But at least when the boy like picks up one of those forest spirits, he dances like this little jig, and it's it's pretty cute. So, yeah.
Nice. So $13, your thoughts on Houstoria?
I think $13. Typically puts this in a try it category, but gosh darn it, I was too charmed by this one. By the time I'd gotten to like a few puzzles in, I was like, okay, this is actually pretty legit. So I'm gonna actually go ahead and bump that try it to a buy it.
Cool.
Let's go ahead and get this one. It's a charmer. It'll sneak up on you a little bit.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Also very sweet is Pernell, you might like this. Pepsi released a cream soda cola.
Oh, they've had that in Texas, I think.
The Pepsi soda shop, cream soda.
Yeah, let me.
That's a surprising. Well, I mean, I know Dr. Pepper had a cream soda variant, but I've never heard of it in the form of like cola.
Yeah, they have Pepsi, and it's made with real sugar, too. So it's the good Pepsi mixed with cream soda. They also have a black cherry version of this new kind of soda shop version.
But the question is, where is it coming?
It's out now.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen
it. Is it only at Kroger?
No. No, I found it. I found it at Walmart.
Got it at HEB? I hope so. Yeah, Walmart and Target looks like it. I don't think HEB has it yet. That's okay. Yeah, I've seen. Yeah, this came out like a little while ago.
Thousands of dollars in credit to Target. I'm good. Gimme.
Oh, it's new to my area, so.
Wild Cherry Pepsi almost took over Dr. Pepper for me in childhood one time.
Wow.
I got really into cherry Pepsi, but now it's like, now of course I still like Dr. Pepper more, but I really do want to give this black cherry Pepsi a spin.
You'll have to give it a go. Yeah. I like the cream one. I think it's, and it's better in cans than in bottle, I think. Because I've had the cream soda one in bottle and cans, and I think the can is just has a better taste to it.
For sure.
The sad part is the liquor's not in mine yet, but I'm guessing they're just starting to roll them out.
Probably. Right. I don't know. Anyway, next game to talk about is Fort Triumph, developed by Cookie Bite Entertainment, published by All In Games, released August 13th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Fort Triumph is a challenging fantasy turn-based tactics game where permanent death is a possibility at any moment. How's that for pressure? Brunel, tell us about Fort Triumph.
That sounds like a lot of pressure.
It does. How many people did you lose and how quick did you lose them? Because I lost somebody on my first fucking mission.
Oh, the first mission sucked, but once you get past the first mission, it's easier to manage. And if you can't manage it, you'll just save scumming like I did. Because screw that, I'm not losing my people. I don't play like that. But Fort Triumph is honestly, I think I reviewed it in the past, but I will say again, this game is legitimately pretty fun. It has a sort of XCOM style movement. I feel weird saying that now because I'm starting to think that XCOM movement is becoming like the norm of movement. But in the form of your characters having movement points, you can kind of traverse and like take cover behind various objects and the like while you're doing combat with various enemies. However, the sweetness about this particular game compared to other games in this style of gameplay is that your spells can sometimes work with the environment. So, for example, you might have a character who has like a grappling hook attack. He can use that grappling hook to grab an enemy and then pull him into a tree, thereby slamming him to the tree and doing damage to him, potentially also knocking him unconscious for a turn or two. There might be another character who can fire a hurricane or tornado, whatever your dialect, towards a tree. Depending on what direction the tornado hits the tree will go tumbling down, and if there's an enemy under it, it will flatten said enemy, more likely killing it, but at least doing damage and also knocking an unconscious for a turn or two. The enemies can utilize this stuff too, but for the most part, it's just really cool about the fact that you can take cover and use it to your advantage. It's not necessarily just a matter of like, okay, this guy's behind the tree. What do I do? It's like, no, I'm going to knock that tree over.
Yeah, the guy behind the tree, what do I do? Knock the fucking tree on him.
Yeah, it's friggin' great. I love that. Like, it's a pretty cool aspect of the game. And another thing I liked about the game is that, this is a double-edged sword, really, is the fact that your party members aren't, like, they have lines, per se, but the lines are interchangeable based on who you have. Like, the lines aren't attributed to any specific people. So it's just like a wacky story that is told through NPCs as you, well, not NPCs, but through like just rando characters that you acquire when you recruit them to your guild. That's the negative end of it. Positive end of it, however, is I like how characters are in this game, because while there are only like four classes total in the game, the way they work is cool, because as you level up your character, you will gain new skills. Like, you'll get access to like three skills that you can choose from. Sometimes a skill that you can get will be a crossover skill from another class. In addition to that, however, is if you were to, say, recruit a new character from, like, the guild, and you utilize one of the classes that was available, you're not guaranteed a specific set of starting skills. Every character generally starts out differently, both in their stats and also in the skills they bring to the table. So no two mages, well, they can be the same, but only if you really luck out on the random pulls of skills and you opt to choose those random skills. But for the most part, I think I feel confident in saying that it'll be rare if you come across two characters that are built the same way as you if you play with them a bit. They are built differently. They work and play differently, despite the fact that on the surface it seems like there's not a lot of variety. There actually is, and it's deceptive how well they pull that off. I also feel weird about, but I got used to the whole map mechanic, in that it's not just going from like node to node or anything. Like, there's actually like this weird like board game sort of thing that's going on between missions where you're moving from locale to locale with one or more parties moving the board. And there's also rival parties doing the same thing, trying to beat you to various events that are on the board or treasure chests or items. There's some stuff going on here. But it's a pretty cool game. And I feel like when you combine the XCOM with that top board game-esque mechanic, there aren't too many games I can think of that do similar. So what was your take on this bad boy? Like you said, you had a lot of trouble with surviving, What did you think of it as far as just, like, putzing around with it and stuff? Like, what did you think of the mechanics?
I really enjoy the fact that on the, like, the overworld map, when you get into battles that you would normally just steamroll the opponent, it's like it gives you the option to just win the battle. And yeah, I think more games need to do that, especially in games where grinding is a big part of the game. Instead of, you know, swirling away to a new battle and making me spend the time to just steamroll the enemies really quickly, just make me win the battle. Like Earthbound did at how many years ago?
That's still, to me, in my opinion, that's still the best execution of it, because while Persona 5 did it in recent days, you had to earn that shit. It took time. It wasn't like a gimme option at all.
Yeah, that's...
Earthbound's so great.
Earthbound is great.
It's one of the all-time best. Like, people are like, it's worth money. I'm like, I don't care. It's staying on my shelf.
I regret getting rid of my Earthbound.
Aww.
I did it in the past. I just regretted it and then got it back somehow before the price jump kicked in again. I bought two copies of it by accident. Again, this was before the price jump kicked in. I bought two copies. And I was like, well, my one friend really wanted a copy of it too. Here, I'll just give it to him. So I gave it to him. He threw the box and everything in the trash.
Oh, my God. Just
kept the game.
No.
Lost the game. Yeah. I'm like, I gave you a mint and you just lost it. I have so many stories of shit like that where, like, hey, this game is worth hundreds of dollars. Where'd yours probably go, Parnell? I loaned it to a friend trying to be nice and he lost it. Well, that's why I don't loan games out anymore.
Anyway, Fort Triumph, you can't loan out. It's $20. What do you think of Fort Triumph?
This game is worth borrowing from a friend. No, it's actually pretty good. I think it's a fun game and worthy of your time. Again, the only detriment, again, it doesn't even apply to everybody, just how the narrative is not really tied to any specific people. But it's still funny. The lines are funny. And it still gives you a sense of progression as you progress through said narrative. So give it a go.
Cool. All right, one final game to talk about tonight, and we're kind of inching near SML After Dark territory. I don't think this is as risque as some of the games we've covered, but final
spoilers,
game
no.
Final game to talk about tonight is called Pretty Girls Breakout, developed and published by Zoo Corporation, released September 28th on Steam for $5.99. Striking the ball at the right time, breaking blocks, and collecting costumes of cute girls with animal features. A battling action-type breakout game that hits, and hits back. Chris, tell us about your time with Pretty Girls Breakout.
Yeah, it was a... I was nonplussed to learn that it's not breaking pretty girls out of jail, which actually is a game on Switch.
Is it?
Anyways, yeah, there's one. I don't remember what it's called, but anyways, no, this is actually Breakout, which of course people know. Some people know it as Arkanoid, but it's basically the game where you move a paddle ball, like, you know, platform around and bounce a ball back and forth between squares that you like destroy. So, and there's a lot of variations on this formula, and, you know, some of them are really, really cool. This one's actually pretty cool, too. It is basically where, instead of a platform, you've got a lady with, like, this kind of, like, you know those little plastic toy lightsabers that had the thing where, you know, when you flung it, it's like it would go, and, like, extend, because, you know, it had, like, the pieces of interlocking plastic on it. Yeah. That's the weapon that this lady has, I guess. And, or, I don't know, it kind of looks like a push pop, like you'd get from an ice cream truck, if you're weird, or young, or both. Anyways, so, and instead of, like, passively letting the ball hit the platform, like normally happens in these kind of games, you actually do have to swing your plastic lightsaber at the ball in order to get it to move in the other direction, which of course that's what you want to do, because otherwise you lose the game very quickly. You got two buttons. One of them's kind of bats it in one direction. One of them kind of bats it in the other direction. And of course your position in relation to the ball is going to determine the trajectory of it. And, you know, like I said, you hit the blocks that are on the upper part of the screen until they're all gone. Often it ends up that you got just the one in, like, that one corner, and you just can't figure out how to get to it.
Does the game do anything for that? Because I know some games, after a while, like, you could tell the ball kind of has, like, a magnetization towards that final piece.
Right.
Does this game do anything like that?
No such luck on that front. I mean, there's lots of power-ups and different things. You know, the usual fare as far as, like, these kind of games go, and that's, like, the laser that, like, lets your lady, like, shoot lasers straight up that will destroy, like, blocks while she's moving. Of course, still, you have to move to you know, hit the ball. And there's the one that makes multi-balls. And, yeah, it's... there's nothing like that, and in fact, the game is on a timer, so you do actually have to, like, you know, if you get stuck for too long, you'll lose. However, I will say that I have yet to... I always lose my lives before I lose the timer, so it's a very generous timer. And it's funny because it's, like, the timer it is an actual, like, timer that's in there, but also, like, it's represented by, of course... The lady on the left, who is, you know, the one that you're trying to basically unlock a costume for, it'll, like, do this little laser going down that, like, you know, gets rid of that new costume. You're like, no, but not in a sexy way. It just, like, it just reverts to the costume that she had at the beginning. And that's the thing, is that this is a pretty girl's breakout. It's not a sexy girl's breakout. The ladies are, you know, of course, the usual, you know, anime pinup babes, but all you're doing is unlocking other, like, perfectly innocuous costumes with them. I mean, this is as far as, like, any games that I've been playing lately that have the word girls in the title, this is by far the tamest. You know, Steam rates it for sexual content, but I'm like, where? Where?
I mean, it's just because of, like, the flirty, the fan service.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no outright nudity, but...
No, but I mean, nor is there, like cleavage. I mean, there's not really anything. It's just cute costumes, you know?
I'm looking at some of the screenshots on Steam, and I don't know if I would show them on Twitch, but...
Oh, are there, like, more risque ones? Okay. I guess I haven't unlocked the bikini yet, then, because I will say...
You gotta play more, I guess.
Well, I played for a while. I'm saying this game is kind of hard.
More.
More pretty girls.
Get the boobs. No,
yeah, this game is actually... It's fairly difficult, as breakout games go. But I was gonna say, like, you know, despite the relative tameness of the sexiness part of the game, like, it actually is a pretty solid breakout clone. I quite enjoyed the format, like the way that they line up the puzzles and everything like that. Definitely has you coming back for more. It's nice that it, you know, it's kind of this thing of, like, instead of, like, losing a ball and, like, you lose three balls and you're out. It's kind of like there's different ways that, you know, it's a little more generous on that. Like, it's basically like a heart thing, like Legend of Zelda. And you lose a heart if you lose a ball, but you also lose a heart if, like, there's a laser turret and it shoots you. But if you bat the shots like the ball, then they actually go back towards into the puzzle and will break blocks for you. So it's like you can use, you can kind of use, like, these enemies firing at you at an advantage and, like, you know, help you clear the stage a little faster. So I actually quite like that combat aspect of it as far as, like, a breakout game goes. You don't see that very often. So mechanically, actually a really good game.
Cool. So is it worth $6?
I guess if you want to see a bikini within an hour, then, you know, maybe look elsewhere. But mechanically, if you are looking for a pretty good, you know, breakout clone with, you know, kind of a cute, you know, kawaii, like, aspect to it, then, yeah, look no further. This is pretty darn good.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're done with this episode. Fucking made it through. Yippee.
Huzzah.
Huzzah and shit. We made
it. No, they weren't short, but they were full of meaty goodness.
Sure, of course. Slightly into the 2-hour mark.
Close. Yeah, we didn't get exactly 2 hours, but
that's good.
Still, goddamn, like, shut up, people. Y'all talk too much.
I'm pretty sure the developers would be like, hey, what did they say about our game? They said it was good. Anything else?
Hey, I mean,
literally nothing else. They just said it was good, and then they're like, move on.
If you want to count, like, my riffing at the beginning of the As Divine Saga review, I technically reviewed 30 games today.
That's bang for your buck.
Very true. Music this episode, we're going to play something from Martial Art. They have a new album out, and we get to check it out and play something off it and go check it out because it's good shit. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Martial art is also a really good Garbage Pail Kid.
Is it?
Yeah.
And a really good video game band.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
Right.